Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to Radio Islam International, the early Sunday morning with your gardening program. And I must say, all this talk about a cold front hitting us, well, it certainly hit Cape Town, but it hasn't reached Durban yet, alhamdulillah. With me this morning is my guest Astrid, our, I should say, resident horticulturalist from the Durban University of Technology. And she is a chunk of treasure, I should say. Not how I would describe her if you wanted to see her, but she has all of this amazing information in that mind of hers about gardening. And we are going to be speaking about permaculture today. We're carrying on from last weekend. And quick rundown, the practice of the permaculture is basically, she gave me homework to do, by the way, so this is my way of interpreting exactly what we spoke about last week, and I hope I get it right. The practice of producing food, or I should say plants, really, not food, but food and energy, plants, that kind of thing, using ways that do not deplete the earth's natural resources, but using those resources to ensure that we produce natural, sustainable systems that are that become part of nature or mimic nature in a way that would sustain the garden and make it beautiful and make the gardener feel better at what they're doing. Astrid, good morning. Have I got it right?
Good morning, Anisha, and good morning to the listeners. Yes, you hit it right on the nail. We, in permaculture, you use the natural cycles of nature to enhance the garden and actually let nature work for you. So there's, you don't, as a gardener, you don't have that much input. So, yes, you recycling and all of that.
I suppose you use a lot less words than I do to explain that. Well, for all the gardeners out there, I'm not sure if I greeted, but assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to Radio Islam. And like I said, this is our gardening show this morning. And it's please remember that it is an interactive show. You're welcome to, you know, call in and, or rather, I should say, send us your messages or your questions or your even your suggestions to the number 084-030-9955. That way I can ask your questions on your behalf to Astrid if there are any. We'd love for you to call in or rather not call in because you won't be able to on this number. But if you could message us on that number, we'd be able to give you responses to the questions that you have. And inshallah, I hope that we do have many of our listeners. I know it's early morning, but gardeners are usually up and about this time. And even if you're just laying in bed, give us a shout with your message and we'll get Astrid to get her answers to us early Sunday morning. So Astrid, today we're talking about the design and we're talking about ethics and principles of permaculture, am I right?
That's correct, yes. Permaculture, it can be a way of life and using nature or mimic nature in our gardening design. And it doesn't just stop with food gardening, with everything about gardening. But before we get to the design principles, I just want to touch on the basic principles of permaculture. The first one is caring for the earth. And under caring for the earth, we must look how we as human beings and the decisions we make impact on the earth in the long term. Mm-hmm. This earth is basically sustaining all life as we know it. And we must consider things like how our practices can harm the natural environment. We have to prevent waste and pollution and try to maintain healthy systems like healthy soil systems and water systems, and also try to foster the sustainability of healthy ecosystems.
Before you go on, I have a question. That someone's just sent to me. It says, what is the difference between organic gardening and permaculture?
Okay. Organic gardening is also you, based on the same principles as permaculture, where you use your things like recycling, making your own compost, and not using harmful chemicals and pesticides in growing your vegetables or garden. Permaculture goes very much deeper. As I mentioned before, it's a way of life that one can adopt, and it includes all your natural resources and how you can use these natural resources to sustain healthy ecosystems. So it goes far more beyond just organic gardening.
Okay, all right. So basically, organic gardening is only a portion of permaculture, actually.
That's correct, yes.
All right, so let's carry on. You were saying that there were ethics and principles involved with regards to how we go about with permaculture.
That is correct, yes. So the second principle within permaculture is also caring for people. With caring for people, you, and that is day-to-day living for me, are things like respecting each other, including other people within what you do. For instance, with the food gardening, you can include your neighbors, schools can include learners, helping each other, and yes, basically protecting and upholding human rights. So that's all part of principles within permaculture. The third one I want to touch on is sharing resources. So we can share our surplus resources with others so that they too may have a healthy, productive, and prosperous life. For instance, avoid wasting by giving to each other the things that you don't need anymore. Saving what we have so that we are able to share with others in their times of need. What I'm passionate about is passing on our knowledge and expertise.
Yes.
Especially when you can help others to improve their lives. So you pass on what you know. You don't need to give money or monetary value, but you can instill that knowledge that you have and teaching other people. Then looking for opportunities to practice generosity and always be grateful for what you have, even if what you have is very little at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fourth and last one is promoting all life. Nature works in cycles, and all life is important. And with all life, basically, you have your natural cycles. For instance, if you look at earthworms, they feed on organic matter, leaves, and so forth. They decompose that organic matter, which in turn feeds the soil with nutrients. Plants basically take up that nutrients and they grow healthy, produce flowers. Bees come and pollinate those flowers, and then from there, fruit and vegetables develop after pollination. And we then get the sustenance from the food and vegetables. So all life is important, your earthworms, your bees, your birds, your microbes, and that forms the whole cycle, basically. Then we should also look at when we design our gardens, we must look for diversity. In plants and diversity in different species, and that is how we mimic nature, basically. So avoid what we call monoculture in gardening systems and landscapes. Monoculture is where you plant just a few varieties. Say, for instance, your whole garden is just a rose garden and nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
That is what we called monoculture. So instead of just having a rose garden, interplant it with different types of plants that will attract beneficial insects and birds and so forth. And you will find that your garden works better. Also avoid using harmful insecticides, herbicides, artificial fertilizers, or any chemical additives, because that will basically build up in the environment and it can pollute the environment and cause a lot of problems to the environment.
Okay, so basically what we're saying is that permaculture, other than just growing plants and making sure that they are organic in their development or from the time they are sustained, we are also saying that this type of the way we garden in this manner can help others. It doesn't only have to do with the garden, but it goes out into the broader community. Last week we spoke about introducing permaculture into schools could mean that they could then end up having maybe a soup kitchen where they could cater for the children who are unable to afford lunches. It could help maybe somebody who runs an old age home where they could actually sustain themselves.
Exactly.
And something that you mentioned that I think that each and every one of us should actually take cognizance of is the fact that being grateful. I think we forget that we are, we've been given so much on this earth and we're never really always grateful for it. If you look at our cultures previously, whether we came from a different religion or a different background, before we ate, we all prayed. That's being grateful. And you don't see that much anymore. You just see people tucking into food the moment they get it. The waste that we see as well around us, pollution that we see around us. And like I always say, I'm an activist of pollution. I don't want to see the earth go. I want to see my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren go up to the earth where they can enjoy being around nature. And today we're seeing a lot of that being destroyed when you take the Amazon forest and things like that. So these things are all important. And I think, looking at permaculture from when we started, I didn't realize how involved this would be. And suddenly you're taking us through the steps and you're seeing a bigger picture open. So now we're talking about design and you're talking about how the garden should be structured and what is best to use. What happens in the case of, I know last week you did say that you can do this on different scales. So you can do it within a little apartment, somewhere in a very urban area, or you could actually do this on a farm somewhere out in the rural areas.
That is correct. Permaculture, as you said, we can apply it on a very small scale or even on a very large scale. Design principles stay the same basically, and getting into that, the very first thing you do is to observe the site and look at the resources that you have, say for instance in your garden that can use within your permaculture design. So the first thing you do is just to have a walkabout and do a site analysis and just write down what is on, say for instance in your garden that you can use. But let's start at the start. Every garden that you want to start or to revamp. So you look at the characteristics of your garden. You note basically where is your north facing side. So what you do is you basically on a paper just roughly draw the boundaries of your garden, where the buildings are, where the existing trees, big trees are, etc. And then you look where is north on your garden, north facing. And you note that down on your piece of paper. Now, north facing can become very hot and dry in summer. So that's a very important aspect to know, that that will be your hot, very sunny side of your garden. So that is good for plants that can withstand heat and dryness. And then also for that site, you need to know that irrigation will be very important factor here. So it must be plants that can withstand that hot, dry conditions, basically. You can plant trees on that site to just cool down the heat. You observe where is east. East gets morning sun and it works very quickly. So it's the ideal area to plant, say, a vegetable garden or into propagating, growing seedlings, making cuttings. That east facing will be the best place to do that sort of activities and have your small plants or your little nursery, if you would like to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
Your south facing will be the most coldest part of your garden. So that will be cold and moist, and that will be ideal for shade-loving plants. However, it can get very cold and shady during winter, and in areas where you have frost, your south-facing side will, you most probably will have the most frost in those areas. Your west-facing, that gets sun very late in the morning. So it's cold during early mornings, but it can get very hot during the afternoon. So west-facing is an ideal place to plant herbs and indigenous, those sort of type of plants.
Okay. So before we go on, let's take a short break for our ads, and then when we come back, you can take us to the next point.
Okay.
All right. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to Radio Islam International. Yes, we are going through our gardening program, and we're speaking about permaculture. At the moment, we're discussing design, and Astrid, our horticulturist from the Durban University of Technology here in Durban, is taking us through the process of design. So Astrid, we're talking about irrigating the garden.
Excuse me, I didn't hear that, sorry.
I said we're talking about irrigation within a permaculture garden.
Yes, not only irrigation, but observing the site and seeing what resources you have. Irrigation is one part of that. But touching what we were talking about before the break is observing the site and looking at the north, east, west, and south facing areas of your garden, and basically how that influence what you do. So after you have observed that, just to recap, your north slope is or facing very hot and dry in summer, so you will need to have or irrigate that side quite well. Your east facing gets the morning sun and warm up very quickly, so that is the ideal side of your garden to do your for a little nursery, like sowing your seeds, placing cuttings, etc. Your south facing is your cold area, so you need to put shade loving plants on that side of your garden. And your west facing gets sun very late during the morning, and it warms up in the afternoons where it can get very hot. So herbs and indigenous plants can be put on the west facing side of your garden. Okay? So after you have looked at that aspect, you must look at other things and where they are placed. For instance, walls, your buildings, how does that influence the shade patterns within your garden? That is quite important. And then also, the color of your buildings can play quite a big role. White walls or light-colored walls, for instance, reflects your sun rays. So the immediate microclimate against that wall means that it's actually a little bit hotter during the day. So if that wall is facing north, then it can actually get a few degrees hotter against that wall. So that will also influence the type of plants that you place there. Dark color walls and face brick walls actually absorb the sun rays, and at night it radiates the heat. So at night that side of the wall is actually a little bit warmer, so your night temperatures doesn't drop as much against dark facing walls. So all of those small little aspects can influence your design and what you can plant against those walls. Further, look at other aspects, other resources like harvesting rainwater, where you can put your JoJo tanks, and instead of your rainwater running away into your drain, you can actually harvest your rainwater and use that to irrigate. That is also basically saving, and you know, we have a water scarce country, and if you harvest your rainwater, you can use it again in your garden. Also grey water, like water from your washing machine or from washing up, basically. This water can be recycled and used within your garden. And so that will all help with different, or as I said, using your resources. And again, kitchen waste. In permaculture, you use that to do your beds, basically, as I explained last week. It can enrich the soil, and it gets decomposed, and plants reuse that again.
Okay. And then with saving water, what other things, you know, does the layout of the land also affect how we can, you know, save water? Like you said, you know, placing JoJo tanks in certain areas that would capture the rainwater as it falls. What about the layout of the land? Would that make a difference?
Thanks for reminding me. The layout of the land, definitely. If you have a slopy area, water basically runs off to the lower areas, the lowest areas, basically. So those would be ideal places to construct little water reservoirs in the form of ponds and things like that. So you can basically, in your design, at the lower area where your water runs off to, design a little water feature to collect water, and you can use that in very dry areas to water your garden, or water features in itself, to me it gives a very calming effect just to have that element of water also within your garden. And you can design around that, use water loving plants to filter the water, and have your koi fish there, and also create a whole ecosystem around your little pond. And it, it basically creates a nice design element within your garden.
Okay, and what's the next thing that we can look at?
Okay. Yeah, coming back to my favorite topic, and that is soil. I just thought that with every segment I do, I come back to basics. And yes, the basics is your soil. Because all gardening activities are rooted within soil.
Absolutely.
So today what I want to talk about soil is that it's important to know with what type of soil you are dealing with. Sandy soil and clay soil reacts quite differently to things like water. Sandy soil, water runs through very quickly. It has high drainage, high infiltration rate. It doesn't hold water, so your plants can run the risk of not obtaining enough water. With clay soils are very fine. They have a high water holding capacity, so the water doesn't filter through quickly. It's actually quite slow, and it can become waterlogged, and your plants can run the risk of actually standing in water, and then the roots can rot. So it's important to know your type of soil, and there is a very easy method of determining what type of soil you are dealing with. So what you basically do is you take a handful of soil and you wet it, then you squeeze out as much water as what you can. And then you take it and you basically roll it into your hand and see if it forms a ribbon shape. So now this reminds me of when I was a little kid and playing with and playing with the soil in the garden.
I was thinking the very same thing.
So you roll it in your hand. See. Rough. The texture feels very rough, and you can actually see the sand grains, and it cannot form a ribbon.
Okay.
You are dealing with very sandy soil. Okay. So that sandy soil doesn't hold water, as I explained before. Water just runs right through it. So you need to add more organic matter, more compost to that type of soil. When it feels just rough and it cannot bend, but it does form a sort of a ribbon that crumbles very quickly, then you deal with also sandy soil, but not very, very sandy. So when it's also feel rough and this ribbon can bend a little bit and it doesn't fall apart as quickly, then you deal with sandy loam soil. Now sandy loam soil is a little bit better than sandy soil, but you also need to add quite a bit of compost to that soil. And it feels a little sandy, but also quite smooth, but not sticky at all. And the ribbon can bend like halfway around. when the ribbon forms. Then you deal with loam or silt loam soil. Now, us horticulturists and gardeners believe that a loam soil is the best type of soil to grow any type of plant in. It has all the properties that is needed for successful plant life. It holds water, it holds enough water to sustain plant life, and it drains through, and the fact that it drains through, it also holds enough air for plant roots to respire. It also has quite nutrients in, so that is the ideal type of soil basically to have. Okay. When you roll your soil and you feel in your hand, it's a little sandy. It is in time, and this ribbon can bend more than halfway around. Then you deal with a clay loam soil.
Okay.
Okay. So now the clay comes into play here. And the clay you can recognize when it's quite, or when your soil feels a bit sticky.
Yes.
Also, with very clay soil is when it feels very smooth and sticky, and you can actually bend this ribbon into a ring. Then you know you deal with quite heavy clay. So the remedy to rectify very sandy soil or very clay soil is to use as much organic matter as what you can add. When it comes to gardening, very sandy soil are easy to dig, but also they tend to cave on the soil, so you can dig a hole, but it tends to fall back. So that makes it quite difficult to plant. So with sandy soil, when you want to plant, it's important to thoroughly water the area where you want to plant and let the water drain in. And half an hour later, 45 minutes later, you can start with your gardening activities. Very clay soil, on the other hand, is very difficult to dig. When it's dry, it tends to be hard and powdery. And when it's too wet, it's very sticky and you cannot really cultivate, you cannot really dig. So with clay soil, I would recommend that you water the day before, and then the next day it would be quite nice to dig in clay soil.
Okay, that's thinking about all of that, your clay soil would be also, if you're looking maybe to build like water features, using the clay soil would be better because you'd have a better foundation for that kind of thing?
Yes and no. Clay soil would say, clay soil, I would say yes. But if you don't have clay soil, you can do it in sandy soil, because with water features you need to, or ponds, there's a certain that you'd pond.
We're losing you a bit. We're having a bit of a cut-off on your side, I think.
Excuse me?
I say we're losing you a bit. You're breaking off every now and again.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, that's better.
Is that better? Okay. Yes, with ponds and water features, as I was saying, there's a certain way that you do construct it. So I wouldn't say that the soil, the type of soil you have play a very big role in the construction of ponds. It's more to do with what you can plant and how the soil will influence your productivity of your garden.
Okay. All right. So we've looked at the big picture, looking at your area that you're going to be planting in. So we know the directions and what to expect or what to plant where, and we've talked about how you should look at your water and your soil. So what are we looking at next?
You can also, as I said, your positions, your sun and shady areas and things like that. Then you can come right back to the design and the planting itself. And it's important to know your how your plant itself grows, the various heights. And I know novice gardens, I've seen it quite a bit, where people would unknowingly plant plants that grows higher maybe in front, and plants that grows have lower growth at the back. So those are things that you have to look at, and also the shape of your beds that you make. Now, in permaculture, we like round sort of beds, but I know that is not always possible. So you have to look at the height and spread of plants. Your higher plants basically at the back, your plants that say would be your middle height, your fillers in, those more like in between, slightly to the front, and then of course your lower growing plants at the front. If you have circular beds, your higher plants would be in the middle of your circle, and then your medium plants around the middle of the circle, and your lower plants around the edges of your circle.
Okay. All right, I think we're going to have to park it there for today. We've come to the end of the show, and there seems to be quite a bit to speak about, because when you're thinking about this garden, there's so much involved in it. But at the same time, you know, you're using all of the resources and other environmental resources that are available to you. So obviously this is going to be, you know, to take some time to actually put together, because a lot of planning is involved.
That is great.
All right, so let's leave it for next week, and we'll take it from there. So we've gone through, I would say, half of what we should be looking at with regards to design.
Yes. Design is quite important factor. So yeah, we've looked at basically half of it.
All right, so we'll leave the rest for next week, hopefully.
we can do that.
All right. Well, Astrid, you know, we have to come to the end of all those things, as they say. So we'll see you again next week, and I hope you enjoy the rest of what's left of the weekend.
Thank you so much, you too.
All right. Thank you then, Astrid. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Well, there you go. We've discussed our gardening permaculture for this weekend, and we've looked at the ethics and some of the basic principles with regards to design aspects of gardening. And next week, Astrid will take us through the balance of that. So if you are interested in that kind of thing, or you want to know more about permaculture, which I think, you know, for me, it's starting to seem very, very interesting. So hopefully you'll tune in again and get your friends and family to listen in as well, because at the way the world is going at this moment, you know, recently I was reading an article where India is on the brink of terrible water shortages. They are looking for innovative ways in which to sustain their water supply, especially seeing that they have such a big population of people to feed. So obviously I think the rest of us need to start in some way, in some little way, give back to nature what we've taken from it. and destroyed. So I think, you know, learning how to garden is one of the things that we can do, because looking at the fact that we have scarcity of water, what comes with that is scarcity of food. And not many people can actually, you know, be without food. Eventually, it causes the death of human beings, so, and animals. So I think, you know, this is a good way for us to learn to become more sustainable on our own, to learn how to garden. And permaculture is a really good way to keep, you know, your garden within a natural system. So inshallah, I hope you will tune in again next week and listen to what Astrid has to teach us with regards to permaculture. We leave you now until the next hour when we come back with Brother Faisal Patel to speak about the tech industry and what's happening in the tech world, inshallah.